In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things.
Four stars.
That way everybody knows it's a podcast.
Have you heard of podcasts?
Podcasts.
They're a thing.
Yes. But this one's different. This is three straight white dudes talking about movies.
It's never been done before. Mm.
We're paving new ground and we're scared. You know, when you, I feel like, what's his name? Neil Armstrong. He was probably frightened when he took that first step.
One small step for podcast kind.
One small sub for man.
One
giant 5-star review for all mankind.
Ooh, there we go. Because that's a good show.
Mm. Yes, nailed it.
Today, we're very excited. We're going to be talking about Green Knight, the newest film in theaters to us. Actually, to everyone. As of this recording, it's
technically
today.
Release day.
But we saw it last night because we're Fancy Press Podcast. Mm-hmm. It's actually available on Thursdays in this part of the country. But they don't know that.
Yeah, we just show. We're like A-list past, A-list, A-listers.
No big deal.
No big deal. I will get in the line for popcorn, please.
I get to cut all the people that aren't in line.
Yeah, because no one's at the theater.
But don't worry. If you haven't seen Green Knight yet, there's going to be a lengthy, spoiler-free discussion. And prior to that, even lengthier non-Green Knight discussion of other things.
A girthier discussion, I'd say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the bulk of the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's the bulk of the package, for sure.
Yeah. A whole banana hammock of content waiting for you guys.
If you'd like to email the show, please do. You can write into streamingthingspod@gmail.com. We love your feedback, especially as we go through these changes, as they say in France. Mm-hmm. Enza, help me out there, but I'm pretty sure that's right. I think there's a way you can also reach us.
I have offended all of our French listeners.
With your voice as well. That sounds spot on. It's not offensive at all.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I sound like a Muppet French, like a French Muppet, like, baguette.
Thank you, Stefan, joining us all the way from France.
Yeah. But you can call us too if you want to give us
how do you do that?
Poor French impersonation. You can pick up your phone and dial these digits. They are 859-757-4051. Stephen V recently sent us an email.
Stephen the Fifth.
He sent us a voicemail and we appreciate you. Thank you so much, Stephen.
Stephen, we do love you. Love you, Steve.
Love you every day.
You said that was a poor French impersonation. So what does a rich French person sound like?
French.
I have my pinky up. That's the difference. Yes.
In the video format, that joke landed.
Yeah.
Nice. So we've got an action-packed show for you here today. Let's jump right in to Crossing Streams. Crossing Streams is the segment where we, each week, inform you, the listener, on things we've been watching since last we met. And it is cleverly titled, crossing streams because we are streaming things.
And we're crossing them.
It's a
crisscross applesauce, baby.
It's a water metaphor. I don't like to brag a whole lot, but it's pretty deep, the thoughts we had when we came up with that.
With the water metaphor?
I don't have time to get into it right now.
Mariana Trench
deep. It's actually talking about how when two dudes pee and they try to cross their streams at the same time. That was the illusion we went with. We're going to be honest.
Oh, I thought it was a Ghostbusters thing.
Oh, that's what I meant. That's what I meant. So, Andy, what have you been streaming?
I've been streaming The Creek, dude.
Okay.
That is Schitt's Creek.
Really? You've been watching that finally?
I finally jumped on board.
That is a much beloved show. I've never given the time o' day.
Yeah, I was going to say, have either of you watched it?
I've seen the first 6 or 7 episodes.
Oh, okay. So you've seen more than me at that point.
Let me spoil it for you right here, please. Right now.
Go ahead.
I don't remember it.
Right. Dude, it's really good. Like, as far as a pilot, it is the most solid pilot where I really got a feel for the show, and it was well made and entertaining. Usually a pilot's like, you kind of give it a pass when you're watching a show. It's like, okay, they didn't have much of a budget. They probably were doing this, if not on spec, then with very little budget before they had it ordered to series. So we'll let this one slide, but episode 2 better be a banger. But no, episode 1 was a fucking banger.
Awesome.
It was really good. So Schitt's Creek, it's streamable on Netflix. I think there's 6 seasons. It's created by Eugene and Daniel. Is it Levy or Levy?
I think it's Levy.
Levy.
But okay. I don't know for sure. I'm not confident. That's just what I've always said.
Yeah, I've always said Levy.
Okay. Okay. So we'll go with Levy, Eugene and Daniel Levy. Also starring them, as well as Catherine O'Hara, Annie Murphy, and Chris Elliott from Scream 2. The strong hand.
Oh, yeah. Big Chris Elliott fan.
So the IMDb synopsis of Schitt's Creek, it's when a rich video store magnat, Johnny Rose, and his family suddenly find themselves broke, they're forced to leave their pampered lives to regroup in Schitt's Creek. Schitt is Chris Elliott's character so far. His name's something Schitt, and he's the mayor of the town. So it's about these super wealthy people that are suddenly ousted from their mansion and have to go stay in a motel. And dude, it's fucking hysterical. It's really good. There's lots of crack jokes and homeless people jabs and really.
God, like, I love those homeless people jabs.
I love it when comedy punches
down. It's tastefully done because it is a fish out of water story. So you're looking at these people and thinking that they're reprehensible. It's kind of like watching Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Like, they do some horrible fucking shit, but it's funny because you're supposed to hate them for doing it, but still love them because they're good people at heart.
Yeah, there's kind of these layers.
Absolutely the tone that I think that the show is starting to go for. Very early on in it, really, it's just me trying to catch up with the hype. So usually crossing streams, we try to recommend things to other people. Hey, you might not have known about this. This is me trying to catch up on the thousands of people that I don't know, thousands, the dozens of people that have told me how great the show is.
No, you know? It's thousands.
Dude,
it was wonderful.
Thousands of people have been yelling at you. How do you sleep? They're just like lined right about the fucking block. Andy, watch Schitt's Creek with me. And you're like, no,
I'm trying to sleep.
So, comparatively, the other thing that I watched, and I think I might have talked about it on this show before, I don't honestly remember. I started rewatching the Netflix show Lovesick. I know I've talked to Chris about it. It used to be called Scrotal Recall.
Ah, Scrotal Recall.
Was, that's the worst name Scrotal show Recall, ever.
That's at least right. That made it stand out.
It did make it. I thought that Lovesick was the better title, like when you know what it's about. Because it's essentially about a man's search for love, but it's also the fact that he got chlamydia and has to reach out to all of his former lovers and tell them, hey, mm-hmm. I have chlamydia, and so you might have it too. And so Lovesick is actually pretty excellent
title. Yeah, double entendre. More French.
I will say, you were just like, I watched Lovesick and I had no memory of it, but the moment you said Scrotal Recall, I'm like, oh, I know that show.
That title does stand out. So that's created by Tom Edge. As I said, it's on Netflix. It unfortunately has come to an end, and I'm very sad about that. I felt like
Scrotal Recalled.
Nice.
Pretty got good. Him.
Scrotal.
High five me, Chris.
Canceled.
Yeah.
So it stars Johnny Flynn, who is a British musician. He also recently starred in the David Bowie biopic. Antonia Thomas and Daniel Ings. I think Daniel Ings is pretty much the only thing he's been in, but Antonia Thomas is pretty prevalent now. So the IMDb synopsis for that. After he finds out he has an STD, Dylan must get back in touch with every girl he's ever had sex with to let them know the bad news. And he goes through alphabetical order. And so every episode is named after a girl. And we kind of get like a flashback to the time in his life when he ultimately ended up sleeping with this person. And dude, it's so wonderful. It's so heartfelt. It's so funny. I love British sitcoms. I think that they have this unique tone that we have not yet managed to recreate. Now, sometimes we'll take their property and we'll do better, like The Office, you know. But oftentimes there's just something about a British sentimentality and humor that American television just cannot quite grasp. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a prime example of something that is uniquely British, but absolutely wonderful. That said, the pilot, not super great. And that's the juxtaposition of watching both. I watched both those today. I've been busy as shit, so I didn't get to watch a whole lot of stuff. I spent most of the day fucking with camera equipment.
Preach, my man.
Right. Hello.
It worked.
But we think. Right. I know where the show goes, and I know how wonderful it becomes. And like, the pilot has its moments, and it's one of those things, like, if you go back and watch it after you've already finished the show, you can appreciate what they're doing and how they're setting things up. But as far as like really establishing the story and establishing these characters and making you care about them and running with that world that they've created, it doesn't do a great job of it. To their credit, I mean, it opens with within 10 seconds, he finds out that he has chlamydia, and we know that it's Abigail that we're going to find out about. And we're right in the thick of things, but we don't quite know the characters enough to really care. And some of the humor doesn't stick right away. Thankfully, the show got picked up and ran for a while. And it's fantastic. I know you've seen maybe the first episode with me. I'm sure I drunkenly sat you down and said, hey, we got to watch this at some point. But
let's watch Scrotal Recall together, guys.
I don't think you've ever done that.
No? Okay.
But maybe.
Well,
I got. And who in the hell were you with?
Get a couple more of these.
He's with one of the Schitt's Creek guys.
Lovesick. Look it up. Netflix. It's fantastic.
That's Lovesick and Schitt's Creek on Netflix. Steve, what have you been streaming?
Well, first off, I would like to formally thank you guys for taking over and running the show while I was sick last week. You guys did an awesome job. If I do say myself, I streamed last week's episode of Streaming Things. It was really, really good. You can find it on anywhere you get your podcasts now. The two hosts, Chris and Andy, really nailed it. And at the end of the 55 minutes, I was really sad and wanted more. So that's Streaming Things on Apple Podcasts. But for real though, sorry I was sick last week.
Did you rate and review?
Yeah.
Sure. Says everyone who listens.
Yeah, I know.
It's
totally. But funny thing about last week's episode, right? So I was sick. Obviously, I wasn't on it. Mm-hmm. But in the lead up to that episode, in the preparation for it, I was like, oh, we have to. We're going to be talking about Kevin Smith's Masters of the Universe. But I fell ill. I listened to the episode, and the episode starts with Andy going, yeah, I watched like 10 minutes of it and bouncing. I didn't even try. And then meanwhile, I'm like, I watched all fucking six episodes.
Did you like it though? Did you do that on purpose?
Was I right?
Right about what?
About it being like really good if you give a shit about Masters of the Universe. Otherwise, it's just another Saturday morning cartoon.
I think if you really give a shit about Masters of the Universe, you will definitely get more out of it. Okay. The first episode in particular, I do agree with you, where it has so much lore packed in. I equate it to listeners, if you've ever seen like the 1987 Transformers cartoon movie, where the first third of that movie is just a giant battle between the Autobots and Decepticons, and they kill off a bunch of popular characters to make room for the new toy line, who are going to become the new main characters of the Transformers cartoon going forward. And that's what happens in the first episode of He-Man. They kill off a bunch of main characters, and then the second episode, there's like a time jump. I think it's like 5 or 10 years after the first episode.
Oh, shit.
There's like a time jump, so you see like what happened in this world after this big battle that happened in the first episode. And really, it's interesting because like calling this, I don't know, I don't want to get too spoilery, but there's like a really big like you would not expect the main characters to be who they are for the actual show. So for that, it's interesting. I do think it is a poor man's Legend of Korra If anyone has ever watched the amazing show Legend of Korra, it is very similar to that, but because it's only, and I think the detriment mostly lies in the fact that it's only six episodes long. So you can't really, you're not really with the characters long enough to really get the storyline beats or the emotional beats for that matter that you get in a Legend of Korra. But yeah, it's a group of, you know, four characters that are like, we have a goal to save the world and we're going to go and try to do that. And every episode is like a new challenge and with a new antagonist that we have to kind of overcome somehow. And we'll learn things along the way. The big detriment to the show is there's a couple brand new characters. They're not previous Master of the Universe characters. They're brand new to the show, but because they're brand new, they're pretty pointless because so much focus is given to the, you know, the old characters that fans know. They don't really give any development to the newer ones. So like when those characters are like in any sort of peril or danger, just kind of like, who the fuck is that again? What do they do? Why are they here? All right, whatever. Hey, they made it cool. and then the my big problem with it, the final episode. Now, I know this is part one. There's going to be a part two to this season that releases sometime later in the year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Similar to what they Netflix is doing something similar with the Transformers War for Cybertron series, where they kind of release it in parts. So this is technically the first half of season one. But the way that this first half ends is so... it ends on a cliffhanger. Like I told Andy, because I didn't know when I watched it, I didn't know this was part one. I thought this was the season. So when it ended, I'm like, wow, that was a bold choice to end a Netflix series on a cliffhanger, because who the fuck knows if you're getting picked up again.
Yeah. This isn't 2015. Shit gets canceled now.
Yeah. And the way it kind of, the new kind of twist that comes up at the end of it kind of resets everything to the first episode in a weird way. And it's not in a satisfying way. You're kind of like, well, what the fuck was all that growth and shit that we went through with all these characters? And okay, like, I guess I really don't know what the decision was behind that. I guess it's just more of a, you know, raising the stakes is where could you have gone from, you know, the story they were telling? Like, how could you make those stakes greater? But anyway, it's okay. I think it's definitely for a kids show. Like, Andy, I think last week you say they nail the Saturday morning cartoon aesthetic, and I 100% agree. Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful. It has that feeling, but also there is just a touch of adult. That made you look. Just a touch of of like adult themes, meaning like an adult could watch this and like, oh wow, the stakes are really high that you wouldn't get in most Saturday morning cartoons, if that makes sense. other than that. While I was six, similar to you guys, I watched the season premiere of Ted Lasso season two, which of course was wonderful.
Okay,
good. I was very sad to find out they're doing it week by week episode release. So the first episode ended, and then it just like started playing Schmigabadoon. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh no! Did you watch it? It's so bad.
No, I'm not gonna watch that shit. But it started auto playing that. I'm like, no, play episode two, and they're like, oh, that's it. I'm like, oh.
Well, they did that last season. It just drop like the first three episodes, I think, of brand new shows.
Well, I was bummed because when I watched Ted Lasso, it had already completed.
True.
So I like streamed it all. But that day or that weekend, I was feeling sick. So the next day I woke up and like, well, I'm just going to stream all of season one of Ted Lasso in a single day. Nice. And I did.
And you of course, felt better?
I did feel better because Ted Lasso is life. Not football. Ted Lasso is
much
life.
Much like for Danny Rojas, football is life. Ted Lasso is life for us here at Streaming Things.
But also death.
But yes, Ted Lasso was also death.
But also football.
And Ted Lasso was also Ted Lasso. That's right.
Oh God.
Did you guys know I got a notification on my phone that the episode two has dropped today?
Mm-hmm. I got that while we were setting the mics up right now. Yeah.
Very excited.
I look forward to watching that when I get home.
Yes.
The last thing I want to mention is something I just started getting into. So I've only consumed the first episode of this. It is actually a podcast.
Podcasts. Okay.
It is a different type of podcast than you.
Is it Streaming Things?
I've already mentioned Streaming Things.
Okay, I was just wondering.
No, this one is called Edith. It's Edith with an exclamation point.
Oh, okay.
That's why you pronounce it Edith. No, Edith stars Rosamund Pike as Edith Wilson. It is a scripted comedy podcast exploring the untold, true-ish story of America's secret first female president, referring to Woodrow Wilson's wife, Edith. Woodrow Wilson, if you don't know your history, suffered a paralyzing stroke in the White House and they kind of hid it from everybody. Specifically, Edith hid it from people. And it is like highly speculated that for a couple months, a couple, like a good stretch of time, Edith Wilson was running the country.
Oh shit.
And she shouldn't have been technically, but she
I went to public school, dude. I don't know any of this shit.
Yeah. For our listeners that don't know, Steve is a president nerd.
I am. They're all monsters.
Please see our Steve's President's Day trivia episode.
Oh, please do. That was a fun one to do. But no, Rosamund Pike plays Edith Wilson. Clark Gregg plays Woodrow Wilson. And the first episode is really cool. It kind of sets the stake of where she... It's almost like a House of Cards thing where she kind of directly talks to the audience. Like, this is who this guy is. He's kind of a piece of shit, but I can watch what I do. And like, she kind of manipulates him and she's got a little buddy. And the reason I like about it is like, it's dealing with actual historical events and historical people to the point where like, there are some characters from like, oh, who's that? Oh, that was the attorney general of the time. What's his story? Oh, he sucks. Cool. And
dude, that's bold to do another president story and do the breaking fourth wall conceit. Cause that was kind of House of Cards thing.
Yeah, it really was. But the reason why I like this is it's like if you listen to any sort of, even though this is a scripted comedy show, it definitely feels like if you were to listen to a, what do you call that, improvisational comedy skit podcast. There's just that element of like, hey, everybody, how you doing? I'm this character now. All right, bye. And then like, you know what I mean? That improvisational actor, high energy delivery.
Sure.
So it's kind of infectious.
I still stand by Middleditch and Schwartz. I know Middleditch got
that's a great show,
canceled, but yeah.
Separate the artist and the art.
Yeah.
or listen to Spontanea Nation. That's a great, you know, I've mentioned that before. That's a great podcast as well. But that is what I've been streaming. Go download Edith on podcasts, apps everywhere. You can also watch Master of the Universe on Netflix, and you can watch Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus. Chris?
I have been streaming some things. Sorry, I was way too eager there. I was like, I don't want to miss my cue. And then I jumped in too early. Actually, you know what?
You jumped in just right. What are you talking about? I even pointed at you and you like started talking. Dude, you crushed it.
Certain weeks you're really proud of your crossing stream segment. And that is this week for me. I've done some heavy lifting for us this week.
I've been noticing you stream that we almost streamed, and I'm really interested.
I screwed it up for you,
Andy. Was it Masters of the Universe?
I'll start with that. No, we didn't even think about that. Once you were sick, we were like, okay, thank God.
Oh, thank God. The nerd's not here. We can actually watch stuff.
So the first film I watched was called Werewolves Within, and it was a rental. I rented it on Apple TV, but I'm sure it's available on Amazon.
Did you not watch it?
Andy wanted to watch it here together after the podcast, but I was tired, and my wife wanted us to like cuddle or whatever. And so I was like, I got to go. I didn't know he had already rented it.
Cuddle or whatever.
She's like, I'm going to stay up and watch it. And I was like, whatever, Andy. You get to watch everything because you're a single man. So then I went home and did watch it that night anyway. And Andy had started it even, but didn't. So his rental expired.
So I rented it because when we were doing the episode, just the two of us, we had said, well, what if we watch this and then we can review that on the show? It'll be like how we used to do our episodes. It'll be like fresh off the couch and right to the mics. And so we fucked around and we're dealing with things.
You had a work phone call that took forever.
Yeah, I had a work. Oh, I was also working while all this was going on. I was working during that podcast. But yeah, so anyway, I rented it and then hit play and had it primed, ready to go. And then I went and made some food. And then we sat around and talked about what we were going to do on the show. And eventually it was like, if we watch this now, it's going to be really late when we start. So we didn't. But I had already hit play and then I forgot about it.
Oh, and so I didn't get to watch
it. So I donated $7. I'm going to have to rent it again.
Oh, Andy, you saw Werewolves Without.
But Andy missed out is the good news that I have. So Werewolves Within. Werewolves Within is directed by Josh Rubin and written by Mishna Wolf. I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong. So this movie is an adaptation of a video game where werewolves attack a small town. Are you familiar with this video game, either one of you?
I know that the name.
It's based on video game?
Yes.
I had no idea.
But no, I've never played that video game.
It's a video game. I think it's also a board game,
Are we talking like NES era?
Wait,
like Zombies Ate My Neighbors?
I honestly don't know. I just read the IMDb description and heard Jeff Kinnata talk about it.
It's not the social party game Werewolves.
It is, I believe. Where like you try to guess who the werewolf is.
Who the werewolf is?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yep. No, I play that game all the goddamn time.
So it is a movie based on that.
Oh, shit. Now I definitely need to watch this fucking movie. Oh, my God. I love werewolves.
It is wonderful. It stars Sam Richardson, who I'll be talking about more here shortly. Steve's a big fan of his, I know. Milana Vayntrub.
Sprint Girl.
Is the best known for her Sprint commercials. She is the co-star of this film. And it's kind of a Knives Out-esque, Clue-esque whodunit as well. So it's a super one location, at least one small town. You get introduced to, you know, 9 or 10 characters in the first 10 or 20 minutes. And then shit starts popping off. People start dying. You don't know who it is or what it is. I mean, you know, because of the title, you assume it's a werewolf. Mm-hmm. But maybe not for sure. Maybe that's a misdirect, right? So Sam Richardson plays this like forest ranger who's been relocated from his previous city for reasons you don't know. So he's the, well, Andy always has a special term for it.
I zoned out. I'm sorry.
Fish out of water.
Fish out of water.
He's the fish out of water.
I'm not listening to the podcast.
Right. I'm going to listen later. It's cool.
So he's introduced to all the characters through Milana's character, the Sprint Girl's character. And shenanigans immediately ensue. Everybody's like crazy personality'd, goofballs. But Sam Richardson especially is funny because he's leaving his ex-girlfriend, but he really loves her. So when the film opens, he's on the phone with her, like leaving a voicemail that's extremely long. Like, hey, I'm really going to man up. I'm going to do what you said. I'm going to find my own bearings and then I'll come back. And
that's we'll a good be, impersonation. Actually. Yeah.
We'll be together forever. And then eventually it's like message not recorded. You know, he's just like this pushover, super nice guy. And she's clearly been emotionally abusive to him. And you kind of find that out as the movie progresses. So that's the backdrop, the B plot, if you will, of this. I wouldn't even call it a horror movie. There's some gore, but it's chuckles all the way through. Highly recommend Werewolves Within. It was worth every penny of the $7 unless you didn't watch it at all. And then it was a complete waste of money.
I think that could be a fun bonus episode of the show idea as we get a couple other people to join us and we all play a game of werewolves.
Well, I know you have like a tickle or something, but it sounded really sexy. And we all play a game of werewolves. I didn't know why you said it so husky.
Who's going to get my silver bullet in?
Whomever. I'm sorry. Sorry, Phil.
We're playing werewolves one time. And in the game of werewolves, you all have roles, right? Mm-hmm. But no one knows what everyone is. So some people are werewolves, some people are villagers, other people are like other characters. There's this character called the Oracle, and the Oracle can pick people one round at a time. Like, hey, I want to know who Andy is, and then I can find out if you're a werewolf or not. And then when it's discussion time, you can, you know, control that narrative.
You were not the one.
I was not the Oracle. I was just a villager, and just because this was like the fifth round of werewolves we had been playing that night, I decided, you know what? I'm just going to fuck with everyone because I'm chaotic neutral. And I was like, all right, guys, I'm the Oracle. I know who's the werewolf. It's that one. And I just picked someone at random, and she was so fucking mad at me because she was the actual real Oracle. So it became this like, no, I'm the Oracle. And everyone's like, it split the room as to who's going to believe which one. And I'm like, she's a false prophet, guys. No, it's not. And they all believed me.
So you don't know who's the whole game. Wait. You don't know who the Oracle is either?
No, no one knows.
So how does the Oracle have any power to make somebody reveal their true nature?
Well, you have to be strategically, because sometimes it would benefit you to come forward like, okay, guys, I am the Oracle. I do know for sure that Andy and Chris are werewolves. I am the Oracle. But also you could lie and say you are like I did, or you can just say nothing and play it close.
But there's no stakes for you because you're a villager anyway, right? So
yeah, I was just a villager. So like,
you're just getting bored.
I was just getting bored.
Might stab him with a silver stake anyway.
That's fair.
Because they think he might be a werewolf, right?
What?
They might kill you thinking that you're a werewolf, even though you're a villager.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I got them to kill her.
It's like Among Us, kind of, right?
Yeah.
You're an imposter.
Acting sus.
Yeah. Nine.
You're acting sus.
Nine.
What's the other one that's like Secret Hitler? Is it like a clone of that?
There's a bunch of them like that.
There's a mafia one.
One iteration was played, sort of. That's what I think of, at least. The one in Inglourious Basterds where they have like the celebrities on their heads.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But only you can see everyone else's. You don't know what's on yours. And you have to guess what's... I like that too. Yeah, anyway. I don't drink, but I mean, I would like to play some of these games, especially werewolves. That sounds fun. Sounds like a hoot. We could do it on live.
Let's do it. I kind of burped while I said that. Let's do it.
The next thing I watched, also with a lot of Sam Richardson, is I Think You Should Leave on Netflix.
All right.
You guys...
See ya. All right. It goes both ways.
You guys... I actually laughed extra hard at that sketch, just knowing how much it pleases you. I actually re-laughed later loading the dishwasher, thinking about you laughing at it, if that makes any sense. It's a sketch comedy show I think everyone else on Earth has seen before me. Is that, that's correct, right?
I've only seen the first two episodes of season one.
I watched the first four or five, but I was kind of cleaning the house through episodes four and five, just because everybody on the internet seems to absolutely love this show.
Oh, it's real funny.
It's very funny. Yeah. It's really off the wall, and not everything, I'll be honest, not everything lands with me at all. Yeah. I just kind of stare at it like, what the fuck?
They're making,
you made that.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're taking swings.
But some of them are so absurd. I have this roller coaster of like, chuckle, this isn't funny. It's definitely not funny. He's still going. There's a whole nother side to this bit. It is funny. You know what I mean? Like, he'll just take it to the, like, the furthest extreme that he can think of. I'm trying to think of an example, but he'll have like a bit, like I'll just make one up, like a garbage man. It falls in love with the milkman, and then like a dinosaur will come out in the last 2 minutes of the 12 minute sketch. And you're like, what? And then like, they'll carry that out as long as they can. And I'm like, okay, I'm in.
I think a perfect representation of that madness of skit style is the one where he's like, has this ever happened to you? Have you had plumbers come into your house? And
yes,
and then it like evolves into like, and then they start yelling at you and you can't be part of this stuff. And
then just, they start jumping on the bed.
Yeah. And then after like 4 minutes of this guy getting increasingly exasperated, he just ends it with, has it ever happened to you? Like, this is
well, one of them that I was thinking of, I just remembered it now. It's another infomercial with like for a medication or a spinal surgery. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember it.
So it's an infomercial about lower back pain, limiting your life, keeping you from loving your family like you want to, or engaging in your hobbies even. And it's like a guy trying to play tennis, but he's like, ah. But with a small incision in your back, we can make that right with spinal surgery or us or whatever. And then it's going on. But then like the third testimonial is always Tim Robinson. And he's like, now I can finally beat my wife's new boyfriend's ass, you know, and but then it'll go to the other normal people and then back to him. And like there's this little old lady that's like, I can lift my grandchild over my head now. And then he goes to him and he's like, I can lift my son over my head, too. And he can't do shit about it. And it's a grown ass man. And he's like, come here, you little bastard. And but eventually it goes into the third guy doing a testimonial and walking in. I can finally get money back from my old recording artist who tricked me into thinking I was going to be a star and took 10 grand from me. And he storms in. You think that's going to be a quick thing where he like beats up the recording artist. But then he like starts yelling at the recording artist. And the recording artist is like, I didn't trick you. You're going to be a star. I mean, a star. I got a new track and the Q-tones are perfect for you. And it goes on and on and on until he's eventually recording again and everything. And I'm like, what the hell is this show? you would love it.
There's one thing.
I forgot about the original conceit of the sketch is what I mean. Like, and I do that many times watching it.
Yeah. Actually, I only watched the first two episodes because I think there's something he did very specific. He did it like 7 or 8 times in both episodes where I don't even remember what the word it was, but he like called a poo a very specific term, but he kept using that term in several.
Shit poop.
I don't remember
mud
what it is.
Pie.
Mud pie. That's right. Yeah. He kept calling it mud pies. And he said it 6 or 7 times in different skits in the two episodes. I'm like, quit calling it that. No one says right. that. I've never in my life heard someone call shit a mud go pie.
Drop a mud pie.
That was such a weird hang up for me. I don't know
why. Yeah, so I'm turning the show off. That's not what shits are called.
Right. How dare you try to make that propaganda stick with me.
But that's, I think you should leave on Netflix. I don't know that it's the work of pure genius that everyone is saying it is, but I'm not all the way through it. But it is definitely worth a watch. It made me laugh. Also, I rented a film called Zola. I've talked about this many times. It's written and directed by Janik Zabravo. And it's about a stripper named Zola who embarks on a wild road trip to Florida. And this is all based on a stream of wild tweets way back in like 2013 or whatever. So this was, it's a film adapted from 138 tweets or something. Like she just went on a rampage tweeting this story that was
who
real.
Says
it's
art true. Is dead.
Right. But I always knew this film was going to be interesting and I was always excited to see it. I didn't get to catch it in theaters. I paid $20 to rent this movie. Like, you know what? Fuck it. Cause I'm going to miss it. It's going to be one of those things where when I go to watch it, there's going to be something slightly cooler sounding out.
It was one of the few things in life you knew was that you were going to see Zola in the theaters
that week. And then I did not. I forgot about that, but thank you, Steve.
You're welcome.
Just to remind me of my lack of power in this world.
Sure thing, buddy.
But I highly recommend it. I think this film will be a cult classic in a few decades. Okay. Super goofy, dark, but also kind of hilarious in many ways.
So what's the general conceit of it?
A stripper on a wild road trip to Florida. So Taylor Page plays Zola, and she's a young waitress, and she runs into a character played by Riley Cuff. It's probably Cuff if it's Irish. Keogh. Is it Keogh?
Yeah.
Played by Riley Keogh and her pimp, essentially, you find out later. But they're eating lunch. She's serving them. They hit on. She hits on her while she's serving, and she's kind of intrigued by that. She convinces her to go dancing with her, which is, you know, stripping, actual stripping. She makes a bunch of money. She's like, girl, that was crazy. And then, you know, had a good time. Whatever. Secure that bag, girl. I get it. Everything. Nothing's amiss yet because she doesn't know that that's her pimp. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And the next day, Riley Keough's character texts her and says, hey, do you want to go to Florida? There's a place down in Florida where I can dance and make $5,000 a night. We spend a couple of days there. We come back, make a bunch of money. She's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll do it. Cause she's at a place in her life. And anyway, turns out that's a pimp. Her actual boyfriend is with her as well. He's played by Nicholas Brown, who is a Braun, who the guy from Succession. I don't think you guys ever watched that amazing, phenomenal, groundbreaking show on HBO, but he's a huge character named Greg in that, who's hilarious. He's perfect for this role. He's like this super pushover, makes Sam Richardson's character in Werewolves Within look like a strong male role model. like, just, honey, why are you, don't fuck anybody again. You said you weren't going to do that anymore. Like, it's really dark, but it's really funny. And anyway, they end up getting posted on Backpage, which was a thing back then when these tweets were around. And the Zola character is like, oh, hell nah. And she gets roped into all this. There's gunshots and robberies and craziness, and all of it's supposedly true. And yeah, it's really well done. The filmmaking's great, because at one point, Riley Keough's character, like the real woman that that's based on, actually created a Twitter and responded with her own version. And it was hilariously reenacted. And then, because it cut to her, and they break the fourth wall periodically, and she's like, let me tell y'all how this bitch and me fell out. And and it's like, I was a good Christian lady, and now she's wearing like this
Creetson lady.
Yeah, I'm a Creetson lady. She was on this like neck button up pencil skirt, like church dress all of a sudden, but was still with the neck tat and chewing the gum. And like, and this nasty ass bitch walked up, you know. It's just like complete different version of the story. It was clearly not true.
That's cool.
And it was hilarious.
I like that.
She's the one that started getting everybody trying to have sex with us. And then they all wanted me, and she got super jealous. She a jealous ass bitch. And like, I don't know. I'm doing a probably inappropriate impersonation, but the movie's hilarious. I had a great time at like 9 a.m. or whatever strange time I chose to watch it. That is Zola, available for rental. It'll probably free to stream soon. So you could just hold out if you've maybe rented movies recently and it didn't work out, or whatever the situation might be.
Hold the line.
Yeah. Yes.
Hold.
What did I do earlier? Braveheart. Oh, Marvin the Martian playing in Braveheart. I'm not going to do it again, but it was awesome.
Heard.
Damn it, I did it. Legally. I also watched Legally Blonde, which is, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, big fans.
Yeah.
It's available on Netflix. It's a 2001 film that I remember watching my mom and dad, and I loved it. It stars Luke Wilson, Selma Blair, Holland Taylor, and Jennifer Coolidge. And did I mention Reese Witherspoon?
I was about to say, you're missing one key important role.
This was just a landmark of my childhood. I was, 12, 13 when this came out. And I was like, you know what? I love this movie. My wife will totally watch this with me. It's like this or Harry Potter, most likely. Honey, would you like to watch Legally Blonde? And she's like, hell yeah. And so we sat down.
Had she never seen it?
No, she loves it. But there's very few things. Like if I'm like, hey, do you want to watch this experimental art house film? She's always kind of nah on that. And I'm usually nah on watching Harry Potter for the 18th time that day. So
how dare you?
Right, sir. Right. I mean, they're great films. But Legally Blonde holds up.
Patronus is a wet blanket.
It holds up. And it was so good to see Luke Wilson in something that wasn't a Wes Anderson film. Like, you know, just this normal, charming guy.
He also does not age.
Yes. It's a weird family.
Yes. Paul Rudd.
The pact with the devil that he and Paul Rudd have forged.
Did you guys ever see 310 to Yuma?
Yes.
Of course.
Do you remember Luke Wilson's random ass
James Mangold film?
I don't remember that.
No, I don't recall.
He's like one of the, do you remember the like 3/4 of the movie where they have to
does
go
he have
through
like
a
5 o'clock shadow? Mm-hmm.
He's got like a beard, but he also has like insanely yellow teeth, and he's like the henchman of like a far lesser known actor.
That actually is jarring my memory. Yes.
Yeah. When he shows up, it's like, is that Luke Wilson?
What happened?
Why is he in that role?
310 to Yuma. Of course I've seen that film. It's a great movie. So anyway, I'm sure you've all seen Legally Blonde. I just want to let you know, if you haven't seen it in the last 20 years, like me, it is at the 20th year anniversary of it, and it does hold up. I cried. I don't remember why.
That was one of those substitute teacher movies. I watched it a bunch in high school.
They played it in school a bunch?
They played it in school?
Oh, yeah. Dude, your public school experience is far different than my public school experience.
And Bend and Snap. That's a recent watch joke. Anywho,
what class did they play that in?
Science. Or maybe law?
Social studies.
I'm pretty sure my anatomy sub played it more than once.
Anatomy?
That actually tracks.
Huh. Okay. Well.
And then finally, one last thing. I know is a lengthy crossing streams from Mr. Chris. I watched a movie on Netflix called Blood Red Sky. I know Andy's heard of this.
I've heard of it,
Steve.
I don't think I have.
Hideo Kojima said it's amazing, but it's Hideo Kojima. So whether or not it's actually amazing is...
Hey, you know, I love Hideo Kojima, so...
I absolutely adored Blood Red Sky. I thought it was an awesome film. I think Hideo Kojima is right. Not to name drop him a fourth time.
Don't say it a fifth time. We'll summon him.
Can do, man. It's about a woman with a mysterious illness, and she is forced into action when terrorists hijack a transatlantic flight. And that illness, I'll just say, because it's very much part of the conceit, is vampirism. So she's a vampire.
Oh, this is the vampire in the planes.
Yes.
People were...
Much like Snake on a plane. But if the snake was a vampire... But it's really interesting. I'm a huge fan of Let Me In and Let the Right One In. One of the few situations where the adaptation from America is actually really good. But I like both those movies. But what I love about that movie is it asks the question, like, what if, like, a good person became a vampire? And how would it... track in the real world? How would they navigate that? And this is what this is. It's just a normal lady who loves her son, and she's trying desperately to fly from Germany to America to get the treatment that a doctor promises he can give her. And she's using, like, medicine to kind of, like, not fully transform. So it's a long story why, but, and then terrorists hijack the flight and shenanigans ensue. People start dying. She gets wounded. And then, like, there's blood, obviously, and it's really good at acting because it's pretty low budget. They've got some nice prosthetic makeup on her when she transforms, but just, like, the twitching and the way she holds her body, it's all her, and it's extremely impressive. But the story is unique and probably pretty much timely because the whole plan of the terrorist hijackers is that they had these machinations where four or five Muslims were on this flight going to what they thought was a convention. And so they plan to blame the hijacking on the Muslims.
Oh, interesting.
And they actually, like, kidnap them and make them read in Arabic this, like, manifesto. And anyway, so that was, like...
I'm from Brooklyn. Why would you have me read that?
Right. And it's got a cold open, which I always kind of question, like, how... When writing this, if you're writing a feature film, when do you know that this is necessary to, like, start at the end, play for 5 minutes, and then just go back for no reason? I'm like... Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I always think that's
fine. Like, they did a flash forward?
They did a flash forward, but it's like, when is that necessary? I guess it's kind of neat because you're putting the pieces of how it could end up to where you know it gets, but it's also kind of strange. Like,
I think it's just a trick that a lot of filmmakers use to try to hook people in right away.
True.
Like, you get them a little bit of an adrenaline rush right off the top.
There?
Right. I mean, it's kind of fun because you typically about 50 minutes in forget that even... happened. You're just kind of invested.
It can also establish an expectation that you ultimately subvert.
True.
Yeah.
There you go. That's clever. I like that. I don't know that it was necessary in this film because once it gets there, it would have been almost better if I just had no idea. But anyway, that was a long way around to saying you should watch Blood Red Sky on Netflix. It's also interesting because it is a foreign film. It's directed by Peter Thorwarth. But most of it is in German. But some of it's not. So it's like, it's a weird hybrid. Like, eventually they get to America and there's, like, FBI agents and stuff that are, and then some Londoners as well.
Oh, interesting.
So they're just speaking like, hey, get on the plane, these motherfuckers. You know, they're like, there's no German language required there. So I don't know that I've ever seen too much of that.
That's pretty cool. I like it.
I mean, you see that in a bunch of American movies where they go to another country and now they're not speaking English. You know, it's interesting to have the shoe be on the other foot.
True. Yeah, there you go. I guess I never thought of it that way because I'm...
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Centric, geocentric, that's the word. I don't want to say xenophobic because I'm like, I'm not that.
Whoa.
Geocentric. Whoa. I'm a selfish bastard. So that's Blood Red Sky, available on Netflix and definitely worth a watch. Andy, you'll love it because it's creative horror.
Hell yeah.
And I know you're into that. You dig that. You actually inspired me to watch it.
Nice.
And that brings us to our Check the Gate segment.
Check it.
See, I'm paranoid now. I don't want to be cut off by myself in the past ever again. I nailed it on the episode you weren't on. Did you remember that part? Did you notice that part?
No,
I jumped in at right the time.
I'll be honest. You're so self-conscious about when you jump in on this part.
I'm trying to be a better jumper inner, man.
I never understand why you're so hard on yourself. Cause I don't think there's a problem.
Please write into streamingthingspod@gmail.com about my jumper inning and
Steve,
whether or not you think
it's dangerous words in the English language are good job. So yeah, quit.
Sorry.
We need Chris on his A game.
Not my fucking tempo.
What is this? Whiplash? The podcast? God. Check the Gate is the segment where we here at Streaming Things bring you, the listener, all the hottest, steamiest, freshest piles of TV and film news that you can get literally anywhere else.
Yeah, heard it here third.
That's right. That's our motto here. So the House of Gucci character posters dropped. That's the Ridley Scott film starring Lady Gaga, Adam Driver, and I believe, what's his name? Shitty Joker.
Joaquin Phoenix?
No.
Jared Leto.
Wow.
Jared Leto.
Dropping bombs, Andy. Jared Leto.
Shitty Joker movie.
I'm sorry. He's a wonderful actor. I just couldn't remember his name. Yeah, Jared Leto as well. Did you guys watch these or see these?
I haven't seen them yet.
It's really unique looking. I like the art direction. It's funny. Google Jared Leto's character, House of Gucci.
House of Gucci.
It's really hilarious. So the prosthetics and the makeup that they did with him. He looks like... damn it, I'm messing it up. He looks like Paul Giamatti looks now, basically. You know what I mean?
Awesome. Holy shit.
Yeah. So I'm really excited for this film.
I'm trying to get a bigger image to whip it around.
Yeah, you won't be squinting. Yeah,
that's the what I got.
Oh, wow. Yeah, didn't they do a good job?
Yeah, that's a really good job. They did a great prosthetic work on him.
Gaga looks stunning. I'm Google for Gaga.
Kind of looks like Lemony Snicket.
Lady Gaga.
A little bit. Like the...
Not him, but Count whatever...
No, yeah, exactly. But also Jim just Carrey's the way character. That they have the art direction of those shots and stuff, like lighting and stuff, the colorizing.
There he is. There's Adam Driver.
Looking dapper. Look at that pinstripe suit.
Oh, sorry to derail this. I've been seeing a meme going around with Adam Driver recently. I saw it. I think it was a TikTok video on Twitter, but it's him in a diner and he takes a sip of his soup and then just goes, good soup.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So, I haven't seen it.
It's so good.
Is that from a movie?
It has to be.
I really want to know.
It might be Patterson.
Not.
It might be Patterson.
Okay.
I really hope
you think it's just him at a diner?
You just want that to be Adam Sandler getting really hyped about his soup.
Yes.
Because he makes that noise and gives like the okay.
But he's by himself.
But he does the okay symbol to the bowl of soup on the table. He's like, good soup.
I want that to be how Adam Driver is.
It is heartwarming. It is heartwarming. And the only other bit of news that I have is that Scarlett Johansson is suing Disney. I'm sure you guys have heard about this. Yeah. It was all the rage.
I read it and it was very slanted against Scarlett Johansson.
Which is crazy.
Really? And then I was reading about, it's like.
Everything I've read has been very slanted towards Disney.
Correct.
Yeah.
Wait.
Against Disney?
Against Disney. Like they're in the wrong.
Gotcha.
Yes.
The one that I read, I only read one just because I wanted to find out what was up. It sounded like, no, absolutely. They totally breached the contract. She had money that she was opposed to make based on.
So you're in the ScarJo camp.
100%.
Team ScarJo all the way.
I am also Team ScarJo.
Unless she got like a percentage cut of streaming royalties on top of that, in which case.
I don't think she did.
So I got in an argument because I'm an idiot with some friends that I was playing video games with last night. And I happened to kind of read these titles out loud. First, I'll say Disney fired back today because the news dropped yesterday.
Did they clap back?
They clapped back and they released a statement
that they are appalled. And I'm going to paraphrase because I don't have my phone handy because it's recording a TikTok live. But essentially, Disney is appalled that Scarlett Johansson would be so insensitive and selfish during such a unprecedented and horrific time, such as the COVID-19 pandemic.
Sounds was like there a rapist lawyer. We can't believe that they would make these nefarious allegations against my client who's never fucking done a bad thing in their life. And we look forward to defending ourselves in court. He is a goddamn saint.
Oh my God, Andy, I cannot handle the truth. And then they go to jail
for I can't handle the truth right now.
Like 30 people.
Step on me, daddy. Oh my God.
Dude, when you brought up Adam Driver, I immediately thought of John Oliver, like, crush me, daddy.
Step on me, you giant fuck mountain.
but yeah, it's very dickish.
But because if you want to get into the mind of a prick, what they said immediately, not Disney, but the guys I was playing video games with. Well, first one was like, just not having it at all. Like, she's so rich. Who cares? That's so, who gives a fuck? Which I understand his stance. He's in poverty trying to play video games. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, no, I mean, there's a principle to it. She signed a contract. So essentially, for those that don't know, and everybody knows, the controversy is that she agreed to a upfront fee and then a percentage of back-end sales, which is very standard. For instance, for Endgame, I did a lot of research arguing with these guys last night. For Endgame, Robert Downey Jr. was paid $20 million. And then received 8% of back-end sales for a total of $75 million. And he had 35.5 minutes of screen time in Endgame. And then for, I think she got, no, this is from my friend. He claims that she received $20 million for Black Widow.
She did.
And then
he said that in the article I read anyway.
Had an agreement for a back-end percentage. I don't know what the percentage was. But they took a lot of the sales from that go straight to Disney Plus. And I assume she got none of the $60 million that was raised on Disney Plus.
Well, the reason I think that the lawsuit happened was because in the contract, it was like, yeah, you're going to get this percentage. If anything changes, it is up for renegotiation. It changed because they put it out on the streaming platform, which wasn't in the original deal. So she was trying to get them to renegotiate their deal since it changed. And they essentially just ignored her and like didn't respond to her until finally she was like, okay, lawsuit, because you have changed the terms of the agreement. I am entitled to a renegotiation.
Right. No, agreed. 100%.
It's so dumb because, and I understand a lot of people are like, she's rich. Who gives a shit? Like, I totally understand where they're coming from. But at the same time, it's like Disney thinks they can get away with this. And a lot of major studios think they can get away with this with other actors. And if they think they can pull this off against someone of a high caliber acting quality and stardom power as Scarlett Johansson, then who's to say they're not doing that to every other small time actress just trying to make it in the business?
For sure.
And so I think what Scarlett Johansson's doing is incredibly admirable because she's using her status. She's using her platform and microphone that she inherently has being a celebrity to advocate. Obviously, she's making a ton of money off of this. But I think what people are not maybe putting two and two together is she's also investing a lot of money into the lawsuit because lawsuits aren't cheap, especially if you're going over the House of Mouse lawyers. Mm-hmm. You know, she's going to be investing a lot of money and not getting quite as much as a return as you think. And I think she's doing this more on the moral platform so that other artists like herself don't get taken advantage of by the corporate bigwigs at Disney.
Oh, you want to get egg on my face? Oh,
where's my money? I told you I would get 20% of back ends.
That was my original, like, there's this guy I'm playing video games with, like, she's got tons of money, who cares? And I'm like, that's your argument over fuck it, let Disney keep it? Like, Disney's not flush? Yeah. Like, first off, that's a complete non sequitur. If you owe someone $5, you can't say, fuck them, they have $200. Mm-hmm. That's still their $5 regardless. Yeah. Right. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because it took, I mean, TikTok by storm, and I know Twitter was blown up about it and everybody seemed to be in ScarJo's camp as far as like personal opinions. I didn't read too many articles about it. Other
I need
than
to find the article
facts,
that was on the other side.
I don't want to get too like, you know,
fucking Breitbart,
social justice-y warrior on this podcast because everyone knows the bleeding heart liberal that I am.
Mm. Draw that sword of justice.
But let me draw my sword of justice here. I highly doubt that Disney would ever try to pull some shenanigans like this with, I don't know, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Mm. Or Chris Evans. Mm-hmm. Or Chris Hemsworth. Maybe the one woman who's been in the Avengers Marvel cinematic universe longer than anyone else, except for maybe Oh shit, I'm forgetting her name. Pepper Potts.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Gwyneth Paltrow. But she's the most impactful actress in that franchise, and they like refused to give her a movie for so fucking long. And she did the job, and you know, because she knew it was important to fans and all, so she was making a bunch of money. I seriously doubt they would try to pull the shit with another actress or actor if it was a man.
A male actor. Yeah. 100%.
I did wonder whether this has anything to do with the recent decision that they came to regarding the MCU that Kevin Feige, do you guys remember hearing this? He said that they're not going to do long-term contracts anymore. It's like, hey, if you don't want to be here, if you're not excited to come to work, then we don't want you to come. Essentially, the kind of argument they made is fucking crazy. It's like absolutely a Gen Z, like, you know, oh, if you're going to take sip time off, you're really going to fuck over your coworkers. It's like, no, poor management is not on me. It's kind of what they're doing with the be grateful, you son of a bitch, that you're in an MCU movie,
yeah.
You know? And so I wondered if like trying to pull one over on ScarJo was kind of a, okay, if you make a stink of it, you're done.
Yeah. And you know, now that we're talking about this, like I just am reminded of, you know, you look at all the different stars.
What are they
going to
do, kill off her character?
Good nice. Point. But no, I'm reminded of like, of all the different actors and actresses that have been in the MCU over the years, even though we love these movies, think of all the different controversies that have happened specifically from the actresses. Like Gwyneth Paltrow, they like didn't pay her a couple times. That's why she's not in all the movies. Mm. Natalie Portman fucked off because she was upset with how they were treating her. And now she's only now coming back because of Taika Waititi and what they're doing in Thor Love and Thunder. Mm. And then now this with ScarJo and like the whole not having a Black Widow movie for this whole time. It is. I'm not saying 100% it's because, you know, Disney doesn't love women, but it's very, you can raise an eyebrow to how this is going down. There's definitely a culture going on that I think is, you know, maybe not being discussed too much.
It's almost like there's a industry-wide misogyny issue.
No.
That needs to be addressed.
Not in Hollywood.
I just think I've identified something that might need taking a looking at. That's all I'm saying. The three white dudes here at Streaming Things yes. think maybe somebody should look at it.
Sexism.
Yes.
Bring it in, guys. We did it.
We did it.
We did it.
That's all of the news I have here this week. I thank you all for joining us for Check the Gate. And now that brings us to our feature review. The one that we've all been waiting for.
Oh, my God. Bated breath.
The one. The only. Andy's baiting. I mean, no, he's sorry. He has baited.
I'm good now.
I'm talking about Green Knight. Ooh, it got really creepy there. Ooh, nice. So we all went as a trio to see the debut of Green Knight last night. Directed by David Lowery, you might recognize from Ain't Them Bodies Saints and A Ghost Story. But this time, sans Casey Affleck, and with Dev Patel instead, he has adapted the ancient tale of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight.
Have you seen those t-shirts on Twitter that says Dev Patel Summer? I want one so bad.
No, but I want one.
That sounds great. I would take one of those.
It's not Hot Girl Summer, it's Dev Patel
Summer. Patel Summer.
Which was a tale written by Anonymous in the 14th century. Very interesting idea to adapt.
The group Anonymous? Call him the Sir Gawain poet. And so it was really interesting that just popped up Anonymous on that mm-hmm. thing. Or in the title cards for that. Generally, it's just the Gawain poet.
Yeah.
Or they just say who it was translated by.
Anonymous is cleaner if you're already calling it Green Knight and then have a character mm-hmm. named Gawain the whole time. Did you hear a Garwin, or was that just like a dialect thing?
It's like Old English or Middle English pronunciation.
Garwin.
Yeah. The dude that was playing Arthur absolutely was saying Garwin. And at first I was like, oh, it's King Arthur. He doesn't know
his
name.
He's a phenomenal actor. What is his name? Look him up for me. Because he's the one that's in Mission Sean Impossible. Harris. John Harris.
Sean Harris.
Sean Harris. Did you like my fake recognition? John Harris. It was right on the tip of my tongue. It's Sean.
Dude, he is really good.
He's such
a good actor. Oh my God, he got the voice. Do it.
Ethan Hunt.
Gawain.
Gawain. You slay the Green Knight.
I would, but my body.
So
I would jump over the stable, but my body would not follow.
Yeah, I like that. That's what I say in bar fights as well. Ooh, I would fucking go fisticuffs with you, sir. But I,
my body,
would I gotta not be follow. Home at 10. Oh, you're lucky. So anyway, we're gonna do some general non-spoiler reactions to the film. I mean, we've been waiting for this movie for over a year. So let's start off with Andy. What is your general thoughts on Green Knight? No spoilers.
I absolutely loved Green Knight. I was honestly blown away by it. I thought that it was absolutely gorgeously shot. I thought it was fantastically acted. I went into it with middling to high expectations, and they were met and way surpassed. I thought that it was occasionally plotting. I'll admit that. I thought that it was occasionally like, okay, that's a pretty long shot.
Slap David. That on the VHS cover.
Occasionally plotting. Andy Kasson.
4 stars. I thought that it was fantastically acted, and it works wonderfully as an adaptation. I don't want to go too far into that right now because it's hard to talk about that without going into spoilers. I also feel like I benefited a lot by being pretty familiar with the Sir Gawain and the Green Knight story beforehand. Having studied English in college, I was assigned to
read. Oh, are you an English major?
Oh, yes.
Andy, are you an English major?
I'm going to bring that up for the 14th or 15th.
Your tweed sweater vest is telling me you are.
Oh, it's right there.
I pointed to the Shaun of the Dead poster.
Only the people on TikTok know.
So I think that being familiar with the source material does you a lot of good going into it because it sets a certain type of expectation. And so I went into it expecting an Arthurian legend that deals. It doesn't deal nearly as much with plot as it does with dealing with expressing themes and exploring morality. And I think that it did that beautifully. I think that it works better than any other Arthurian legend that has ever been adapted to film, that stays true in a way that no other adaptation has managed to do without picking a side. It's great. But I think that it is absolutely going to be extremely divisive. I think that it's going to be critics love it and the audience hates it. I'm expecting that the audience score versus the critic score on Rotten Tomatoes is going to be vast. Valley between them.
The valley betwixt.
On IMDb, it currently has a 7.8. So, pretty good.
Not bad. Not bad. Generally, it's like Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic that get review bombed. That's where the bros go. I'd be interested to find out. But ultimately, yeah, I absolutely loved it. Now, as I've had time to sit and percolate on it for a little bit, there are things that I've kind of come to nitpick, but I'll get into that in spoilers. But I had a blast.
Steve, what were your thoughts on Green Knight as you sat next to me, a little tipsy? First off, I got to tell the listeners, Steve showed up a little drunk to the theater.
That's awesome.
And I only bring that up because it's funny, because he's coming.
It's usually my job.
He wasn't like stumbling, right? He had his pretzels.
I'm just happy. Having a good time.
But we're watching the previews. And we see the preview for Lamb, and he's having just a giddy old time. Just cannot believe that this movie exists. Looks so excited. God. But then Candyman drops. We watch that whole trailer and everything's silent. I'm chewing my Reese's Pieces and my popcorn. And we're actually sitting next to a stranger because of the orientation of the theater. And there's some other strangers to my right. And Steve, as the lights dim all the way from the Candyman trailer, everything's silent. He goes, "Candyman!" as loud as he can. And everyone erupts in laughter, even all the strangers.
Candyman!
It put me in a mood that would later be dampened by the Green Knight.
Oh, but no.
I was very happy. Well, it's a dour film. You can't lie to me about that.
I haven't been, I haven't been like high or anything like that in like well over 10 years.
Did you smoke weed yesterday?
No. No, I was, I was buzzing. But like being, but buzzing in the theater and watching the trailer for Lamb is the closest thing I've been to like having a drug trip in so long. Cause I'm just like, this is amazing. Every time they would go to a close up shot of one of those lambs in the trailer, I was like, they're talking.
I'm sorry. I know this is a Green Knight discussion. Was that not the most bizarrely edited trailer you've ever seen in your fucking life?
It was
like a minute and a half with 50 seconds of it, like pure horror film. They even used the like the discordant violin and the ticks that are rampant nowadays in all the horror trailers.
I still think Titane is the weirdest trailer I've seen in a while.
So. You shut your damn mouth about Titane, sir.
That trailer looks amazing.
It's going to be the best movie.
I mean, it is a strange trailer. It is to admit.
Sure. I'm just saying it wasn't though. At the end of it, it was an indie comedy.
It cuts to a close up of a lamb, and it's like,
and then there's all these mirthful people like, ha 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 ha, we've got a lamb. And I was like, wait, does this switch? Is this a different movie now with the same animal? Anyway, I'm sorry.
No. So this movie, Green Knight, I feel the exact same way about as I do David Lowry's other movie, A Ghost Story. Mm-hmm. It's a movie that I think is really, really, like, it's technically sound. It's really good. I really appreciate the boldness of some of the artistic choices. I think the acting is really, really good in it. I think it looks really pretty. But I will probably never watch it again. Just because it is a confounding movie. Like, as I was watching, and again, I'm a little tipsy while we're watching this. So there were some scenes where I'm just like, I have no fucking idea what's happening right now. I'm so lost. I'm so confused. And we'll get into why in the spoiler section. But I was, there was very specific scenes, like even now to this day, because I don't have an English degree like Andy, and point at the Shaun of the Dead poster. Because I don't have an English degree, I honestly was not super, I didn't know a lot about the poem. And since I've seen the movie, I've gone and like researched and like, what is, I actually listened to a podcast today called In Our Time by the BBC, where they talk about the poem specifically. And it's just a bunch of, well, Scott, what do you think about this
stanza here?
Do you think the religion plays a big metaphor into the, and it's just all that back and forth. But
I love that voice so much.
Thank you. So I didn't have a lot going into it, and as I was very confused in some sessions, but as I thought about it, a lot of it has kind of made more sense with context, and it's given me a more of an appreciation for some of it. But again, at the same time, I do like it, say, more than like The Lighthouse, which was an equally crazy A24 film that I just absolutely love the technical aspect of it. But I'll never watch that movie again. It was too goddamn weird and long and just like,
you're fond of me lobster, ain't you?
I've still never seen that. That's a big miss for me. I need to catch up.
That's a good one.
I mean, this isn't a big endorsement coming from me because I just said I'll never watch it again, but everyone should see that movie at least once, especially if you're into like technical side of filmmaking. It's a beautiful
movie. I feel the same way about Green Knight.
And yeah, and
you should watch it for sure.
And Green Knight's the same way. Like in Ghost Story, there's what, like that 10 minute long uncut shot of
Rooney Mara eating a pie. Yeah.
Like imagine that happening in this movie, but instead of uncut shots, there's actually like, they sit in scenes. Like a lot of these scenes seem to, they feel like forever, but there's like a ton of cuts in them. They're like, you know, Dev Patel's looking at a sword all woefully. There's Arthur. There's Dev Patel. There's the queen. Oh, this is like one frame of moss. And then like, oh, one frame of woods. And oh, fog.
Random title card.
Yeah. And which I couldn't read some of them because they're like in that super ye old English font, but they're like super artistically done to the point. I'm like, what the fuck's that say?
Yeah. When they did the series of Sir Gawain and the, like they jumped through like six or seven different fonts. And so they showed the first one, I read Sir Gawain and the, and then cut to the next one. And I was like, does that say the Green Knight? And,
the next one, and it still said, like, oh, okay. The one that said, a beheading at the chapel or something. It said beheading. It took me forever to read that. Oh, it's this beheading. I thought it was an H. Heading?
Meeting with St. Minifred?
Yeah, that was the one I was super proud of. That was one I was really proud of when I was, Winifred! That's what it says!
That's a W, guys.
Guys, follow me.
Candyman.
No, it's a good movie. I probably won't watch it again. It's definitely a movie you watch for art. And for those of you who lived in the mid-20-teens, you do get the age-old answer.
To, anyone older than five?
Yeah. You do get the answer we've all been waiting for, and that is, what does the fox say? We do find that out in this movie.
I thought he said ring-a-ding-ding-da-ding-ding-da-ding-ding. But in fact, he says whatever he says in this movie, we can't spoil it. Yeah.
I'll pass beyond this stream.
Thinks about when he's talking to the giants.
But Chris, you—I feel like you have something to say about this movie.
No, no, I'm much calmer than last night.
No, 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 you can talk shit.
No, so I went on. I'll be honest. Now that there's like film buffs listening, I'm a little shyer. But I'll have to be honest. I had a rant after the film, where I felt like. Here's what I'll say about I won't say that because I've had time to think about it. Right. I was upset. I was bored through long stretches of The Green Knight. And I felt like it was unnecessary. And so therefore I was angry. Like I could see where, you know, not to like question David Lowery of all people. Who am I? Who the fuck am I? But I in my chair, eating my Reese's Pieces, I was like, should have cut there. You know what I mean? Like that could have been 2 minutes shaved off right there. And given me the same effect because the cinematography is absolutely stunning. The lighting is like they shouldn't have even done it the way that they did it. And the fact that they did it that way and made it work means that there's better. Does that make sense?
Are they doing like a lot of natural light?
I think so. I mean, there's parts of it, like in the fog and the chapel specifically, the way the light was coming in as the sun rose, I was like, holy shit. I feel like
that would be the biggest compliment ever to the person that actually did light it.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking more specifically all the scenes in the castles.
Yes.
Because they're so dim.
Yeah.
You just get that one little hole of light that comes through that's lighting just
like, I know it's the Dark Ages and you're not supposed to want to live there, but I have never not wanted to be in a time period as much as I didn't like. I almost made a terrible joke, but yes, so I don't want to live in the middle. You know, it looked dim and dark, but so it's gorgeously shot. The score is incredible. I mean, it absolutely takes me there throughout the entire film.
That score did some heavy lifting,
and you got like was it Sean Harris? Sean Harris,
John,
Joel Edgerton, Alicia Vikander was in it as well, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all just doing top notch performances. It's a great film.
It was kind of like a greatest hits of A24 actors, which was kind of took me out a little.
Oh, yeah. Bit. What Comes the Night or whatever? It was Joel Edgerton's. Did you even watch that movie?
Yeah, I did. Okay. I did. That was Joel Edgerton's. And then it had the young rapscallion that ends up robbing him, who's, I can't remember his name, but it was the kid from. Killing a Sacred Deer and a bunch of other.
There's a bunch of other indie films. Like I can picture his stupid face coming up a lot. But so I storm out of the theater because I've been waiting for this for a month. And like, I was mad and I don't think it came off well because Andy was like aghast because he loved it so much. But what I was angry about was that in the last 30 seconds, no spoilers, but the last 30 seconds of the film, something happens that retroactively made me love the entire movie and sealed it all. As you know, I was about to storm out because I thought they were making certain choices with the protagonist that, and I had read Sir Gawain as well in college, but don't remember any of it. But I read a film review by David Ehrlich, who's a critic that I love. And I was going to read it here, but the phone's recording for TikTok right now. But essentially I'll paraphrase because it's a beautiful article. You have to go Google it, David Ehrlich. But he basically argues that there's three or four interpretations of this epic poem, right? This medieval text written by Anonymous from the 14th century. And what David Lowery chooses to do is not take a side on any of those interpretations, but use all of them at the same time. And some of them are exactly the opposite of one another. So hence my confusion throughout this film, like thematically, because he's choosing not to take a side. He's just presenting it as it were. And I don't know how I feel about that. Ultimately, I think that this movie takes work, which sometimes is more than okay. It is okay for it not to be constant bombardment and making it easy for the viewer, right? Like a film being some work is fine with me. Mm-hmm. It's like Cloud Atlas. When you read that book, like there's some work, right? But at the end of it, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, I like it when a movie challenges you and like encourages you to like, hey, stupid, listen, pay attention.
Not everything can be Harry Potter, right?
Like, yeah. Bum, bur, bur,
bur, bur, bur, and just get all comfy and nestle down and be entertained.
Harry, I need you to get the Green Knight.
But me personally, and I rated it 4 stars on Letterboxd. And I saw a tweet earlier today that basically encapsulates my feelings.
Is this going to be your version of Andy's Inception?
I think Tenet. Like, I'll Tenet. Tenet. It'll be in my top films of the year, but I will just do nothing but bitch about it. But I saw a tweet earlier where the guy very respectfully said, I'm pretty sure I loved it, but I need to watch it again. I'm only 75% sure. So that, I'm going to steal his opinion. That's basically how I feel. I'm pretty sure I loved it, but I have a lot of issues. I don't think it was the wisest choice to take no stance. I know Andy feels very strongly about it, and it's a good, there's a good argument for that. But my thing is, if you have to know the ins and outs and take a $4,000 course on a 700-year-old poem to really fully grasp this film, fuck you. You failed. You're adapting it for a wider audience. Yeah, that's my last stance on that.
Hear, hear.
But let's go into spoilers for Green Knight. Everyone who hasn't seen it, fuck off now.
You are entering spoiler territory.
You're bullshit.
Andy, defend thine honor with thou spoilers.
Okay, so let me first talk a little bit about my experience watching the film. So as I said, I had to read Sir Gawain and the Green Knight a bunch of times while I was in school. I also did a lot of drugs in school. So when I'm watching the Green Knight, I was sitting there like, okay, I remember this. I remember the beginning. I remember that it's the end of the year. And they're sitting around telling each other tales. And the Green Knight shows up and he says, I challenge thee to a game. You strike me, and 1 year hence, I shall strike thee back with the same blow that thou giveth me. And then Sir Gawain jumps
whether
up.
Be a cut on the throat or a slice on the cheek.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, and so
you're participating.
Sir Gawain jumps up and he's a fucking nobody. He is canonically Arthur's nephew, and he is not a sir. He is not a knight. He is, I can't remember what the term is for somebody that
squire
is card, but not a knight. He was not a squire either. He was basically just a hanger on. He was
serf.
He was a page is before a squire.
Nephew. There's some goofy, I don't know. I read it somewhere else. It's not a word that I know. It's a word somebody else knows.
A troubadour.
A minstrel.
Anyway, so Sir Gawain jumps up wanting to, you know, achieve some kind of glory, and he cuts off the Green Knight's head. And the Green Knight picks his own head up, and he says, okay, dope, I'll see you in a year, and fucks off.
That's in the poem.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, yeah, I remember all this. This is awesome. And then we get to, like, all of this series of the quest that Gawain goes on and to find the Green Chapel, and then we get, like, him being robbed in the woods. I'm like, I don't remember that. And then it gets to, like, he sees a bunch of giants. He's like, hey, can I ride on your shoulder? And they're like, no. And I'm like, I don't remember that either. And then he meets Winifred, and I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't study at all. Like, I knew I took some drugs, but damn.
Winifred was the woman spirit.
That was right? The woman, okay. Spirit. It was played by the girl that was in Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
The leader of the Flag Smashers.
Oh, yeah. That was her, really.
She's also in Solo,
her.
Right?
Yeah. I didn't recognize her without Solo? Her frizzy hair.
Oh, was she in Solo?
Yeah, she's Enfys Nest in Solo.
I didn't know that. Anyway, I didn't remember any of those things. I'm like, damn, I really sucked. And then when they got to an exchange of gifts, I was like, yes, I do remember this. As the guy goes, I'm going to go hunting. Whatever I get, the best thing I get, I'm going to give to you. Whatever you happen to get at my house, you should probably give to me in return. It's like, okay, what's going on here? I remember that. Exactly.
He wants sex.
And so one of the big themes, and defending my honor, talking about Arthurian legends and stuff, it's less about plot, it's more about dealing with morality. And so we're talking about seduction, we're talking about the values of
chivalry.
This is ultimately a test of the values of Sir Gawain. Do you have what it takes to be a knight? And it's a kind of a morality tale for the ages.
And she says, sir, you are no knight.
But so I right, yeah. After giving him a hand job, it's fucking sweet.
I assume that's what it was.
Was that a handy?
They literally showed her rub the cum on the towel afterward.
Well, I saw the cum towel.
There's a cum shot.
Joel Edgerton was very upset. Sir, you owe me a cum rag. I know it.
I know she gave you a handy. I request mine henceforth.
But so I say all of this to say,
lay your hand upon thy cock.
I didn't remember the cum rag when I was from college.
Yeah,
you know, when we turned the mics on for this episode, I did not think the words cum rag would be said so frequently.
I planned for it.
I did remember the sash. A buddy of mine was asking about, like, what's it about. I was like, it's like this challenge, this Green Knight, and he's gonna cut his head off, and he goes to, like, like some witch and gets a sash or something and it's supposed to protect him. So I remembered the cum, at least that part of the cum rag, cum being rubbed on it.
But stop saying it.
I didn't remember so much of it. And then I read a synopsis when I got home.
I didn't think there was going to be so much of it.
I know.
Right? I mean, he had previously been chivalrous, obviously.
He was a little backed up.
For quite some time. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go on. And you read a synopsis.
I read a synopsis and it talked about the challenge and then a bunch of adventures that are alluded to but not described. And then the exchange of gifts. I was like, oh, no wonder I didn't remember that because he made all that shit up in the movie. And I was like, oh,
wait. So the giant and the robbery isn't in the,
not in it.
Okay.
Not in it. Now I did not bust out, my book to see like how they allude to, maybe says something about there were giants and, you know, and just didn't go into any detail and shit, but there was an awful lot that went down in that movie that didn't happen in the play. But the more I thought about it, I thought that it actually worked really effectively because, except for the giants, I still don't understand why the fuck those went down. But I felt like it effectively translated the way that an Arthurian legend is supposed to work, where it's supposed to show you what it means to deal with the beckoning to a higher calling and making yourself achieve something greater than what you are. Almost in a religious sense, like Steve was talking about in his BBC thing, like it's ultimately almost like the sinner trying to become a saint type of story. And we deal heavily with Dev Patel's character, like kind of being a piece of shit in the beginning. And I was really surprised that Chris didn't enjoy it more because I felt like the way that it was filmed, they kind of used it almost as an allegory for trying to achieve sobriety. And I thought that it was really effective, like showing him as kind of a debaucherous person and ultimately a coward. And I thought that it worked really well, like showing him being called to action and him not being up to the task. And I thought that was really effectively done. And I actually had like kind of an internalized like self-therapeutic moment, like, yeah, oh my God, this is like a really effective way of showing like face your demons or your demons will still haunt you and ruin your life for the rest of your life. And we get to see that in the movie. I do feel like it fell apart in the third act to an extent when we get to the Green Chapel and we sit there for like 10 minutes, literally sit there for 10 minutes. I was very bored.
Or he's waiting for the Green Knight to wake up.
Mm-hmm. But I felt like it ultimately effectively made me feel the way I did when I would study something and it would click what it was trying to do. And I felt that when I was watching Green Knight. I feel like you can look at this movie and say, this is what it's about. And someone else can say, no, this is what it's about. And you're both right. Whereas most adaptations of these types of stories choose a side and they say, okay, Sir Gawain is a piece of shit. Let's tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can have, you know, a medieval scholar come and watch the movie and be like, that's a failure of an adaptation because that is not what it's about. It's not that he is a terrible person. And that's what the story is. It is showing that it is showing what is a terrible person and is also showing what is a virtuous person. And you're supposed to recognize the juxtaposition between the two. And that's what the story is there for. So I thought it was effective.
Hell yeah.
Steve, spoiler thoughts from you?
Spoiler thoughts from me. So in my BBC viewing or listening, they gave me a lot of, you know, feedback and context of, you know, how to tackle this film. And I really do like the, what do they call it? The giving game or something that
the exchange
of gifts game or whatever. Because that's something I didn't quite pick up on when I was watching it. I was just like, oh, lady wants his dick while dude's out hunting. That's weird. And then like he kisses him at the end. I was like, I wasn't picking up on this. I'm here for it though. But you know, reading into the context of how like he does say that line, like whatever, I'm going to go get you something, whatever you get at the house, I also get. I did like, so they brought up something that I thought was really, really cool. And I didn't think about. So he gets that sash from the lady. What does she, what's her name? Does she have
it's
name?
Just Lady.
It's just Lady.
She's the Lady of the Castle.
So he gets a sash from her, and the sash purportedly or supposedly gives him, like, protects him. Like, mm-hmm. he can't die if he's wearing the sash. And really, like, she's trying to, like, bone him for assuming a couple days. And then finally she gets, they do the hand job thing when she's like, don't you want the sash? You won't die. And he's like, I do want it. And so, like, it, he succumbs to his unchaste ways with her specifically because he's afraid of facing the night and, you know, dying. Mm-hmm. And I like this idea of, like, he's trying to be this chivalrous dude. He's trying to be a good knight of high moral fiber, and he's failing these tests pretty consistently. Not so much, I don't even want to go as far as say he's like a terrible person per se. He's definitely just a flawed person trying it's to be
terribly human.
Terribly human. I like that. Yeah, that's perfect. And so he it's interesting because he beheads the knight in the beginning, and the knight didn't say, like, you have to behead me. He literally just, like, strike me and I'll just, you know, I'll return. He literally could have gone up to the Green Knight and just booped his nose.
It was another temptation, I feel like a temptation of glory, like,
yeah,
sticking his head out.
Because that whole room is charged with these, like, you know, big knight guys. They all, like, draw their swords when he first comes in, and King Arthur's like, I will kill you, but my body won't.
Yeah, else. King Arthur even looks around and says, look at these men among you. And he's like, and Dev Patel, you know, Gawain's like, legends, you know, it's,
yeah,
he does a really good job of establishing how he feels like he doesn't belong in this company.
Like, right. Like the briefest of cut over to Merlin and shit. And I'm, yeah, like, oh, that was fucking him. Where'd he go?
Merlin, where'd he go? Come back. But they set that up really well because he doesn't have to kill the knight, but he's trying to impress these legends. And so he kills him. And then, you know, how should he know that the Green Knight's going to pick up his head and be like, all right, next year, later. Mm-hmm. So he's obviously scared because he knows that the blow that is going to be returned to him in a year is, dude, it's going to cut his head off. Mm-hmm. And that is scary because he knows he can't survive that. So the temptation of giving in to getting this magical sash is appealing. But at the same time, he almost feels like there's like a dishonor to getting that robe. Like, he almost feels more dishonorable about having the invincibility sash than, say, sleeping with this dude's lady. You know, and then at the ending sequence, I almost feel like that's a big part of it. Like, I don't need the sash, and, you know, I shouldn't have taken this, when really it's another mistake, because, you know, he feels like it's dishonorable because he's, like, using this magical item to protect him, when really, like, that wasn't part of the agreement in the game either. Like, he could, why wouldn't he be able to use that? The Green Knight is literally a magical being who can just, like, live. So why can't Sir Gawain put on a green mm-hmm. sash and also survive that, you know? I thought that was really interesting. And I don't know, I'm just kind of losing my thought here, but I do like that part of the movie the best.
Sure. I think that exchange with Joel Edgerton, when he says, he kind of, like, calls out the morality of the film when he says, like, so what, you're just going to go there and you're going to face this trial and then
magically be the man you want to be or something like that.
Yeah. Now, mm-hmm. now you have honor. And he's like, yes. It's like, you're just a changed man. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, and then I'm going to miss the man that you were or something like that. And, like, kind of like calling him out for being not, no pun intended, but a green knight, like, being childish about it. I thought that was the most effective scene by far and the most beautifully delivered and beautifully written. That part gave me chills. I'm getting chills thinking about it.
Yeah. This is the kind of movie that, and that's why I want to watch it again. You know, what I can say about David Lowery, even though he does frustrate me at times, is that his films, I think about them for days and days and days afterward. And many films, I'm like, oh, that was good. And then I do not do that. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I laid up late last night thinking about it, reading reviews, and then woke up this morning, just kind of kicking around in my head and like, am I wrong about this? You know, but he does certain things, and I know I'm not a genius filmmaker. A24 doesn't fuck with me at all, but there's a scene somewhere in the middle after he cuts off the head of the Green Knight where he's supposed to be lounging in riches and glory and isn't really. I mean, I guess he kind of is. Everybody thinks he's cool. Mm. But other than that, there's not much benefit to it.
He's like not really quite happy with
this. Well, he's already worried about
these ill-gotten gains. Yeah.
He's still the same person.
The too quick year.
Yeah.
But there's a little puppet show that you see in a courtyard and then of him beheading the Green Knight. And then David Lowery is like, what in my mind, why can't you just have the puppet show cut to Dev Patel womanizing, cut back to puppet show, have the little clever puppet show calendar turning in the background to winter, and then have the Green Knight cut Dev Patel's head off and zoom in on the puppet the way that he did. Leave it like that. Like, that's a really good foreshadowing device. That's a brilliant, like, it sets the tone. It's creative. It's in time period. You know what I mean? Instead, what David Lowery does is he has like the wheel turn and then cuts back. And then he shows the original thing again and just really fucking lingers on it. And then shows the wheel turn a second time. And like, you know what's coming, like you're going to see the puppet Green Knight kill Gawain, but he takes forever to get there. And we see like four puppet show cuts. That's what frustrates me about David Lowery. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you were right there and you just had to fucking put an extra beret on and light a second cigarette and say, you're smarter than me, but you just made it slightly more boring. And what was a brilliant idea. That's how I feel though. Like, I want to watch it again, but you're right. By the end, when he gets to the Green Knight and you get that flash forward or whatever of the life he could have had, where he goes back like a coward, becomes king, he loses his son that he steals from his baby mama and then marries a girl we don't even know out of nowhere, and then starts wars and then dies a lonely, wretched bastard with no honor. And then he wakes up and he hasn't made that decision. It's like, I'm like sitting back down in my seat. You know what I mean? Cause I'm like, there's no fucking way you made me slog through that marsh for 2 hours just to have him be a complete piece of shit, just like he was at the beginning of the movie. There's no way. And of course there is no way. He decides to take the sash off and then the Green Knight kneels and says, good boy. And
you can now off with your head.
And I guess it's kind of left to interpretation whether or not he actually cuts his head off. It's kind of not, because we know that Sir Gawain goes on to be a legendary character.
So that's all of that is drastically different than the epic poem. I don't know if you call it epic poem, romantic poem, whatever. So the Lord
pretty good
that has pretty pretty homoerotic vibes in this adaptation. The way that worked in the story was like they had the exchange of gifts. Hey, I brought you this boar. What did you get? He doesn't say it out loud, but it's like, well, your wife tried to seduce me. She kissed me. That was the only thing I got. So he gives him a kiss on the cheek and doesn't say anything. And then the next day he brings him some rabbits, and his wife had tried to seduce him again while he was out. And so he gives her two kisses. And then the third night she like tries to seduce him again, but ultimately gives him the sash. And then the dude comes back with his gifts or whatever. And he just gives him three kisses. He doesn't tell him about the sash.
Yeah.
And so when the showdown at high noon happens, it is the Green Knight mocks Gawain when he flinches, as he does in the movie, and then Gawain steals himself, and then the Green Knight gives him a small nick on the neck, and then he reveals himself to be that lord of the castle. Mm-hmm. And he only gave him that nick on the neck because he withheld the sash. And basically you find out that he was turned into the knight by Morgan Le Fay, who's like the sorceress from Arthurian legend, and it's like his sister or something. And it was all like a big holiday ruse and whatever.
Is that a character in the movie?
Morgan Le Fay?
Morgan Le Fay is just a character of Arthurian legend.
It is, but also I discovered in the movie, it's Gawain's mom. That was Morgan Le Fay at the beginning that quote unquote summoned the
That's what I was so confused
Knight.
About.
That's what I wanted to. I, makes that's way more the sense. Thing that
your mom's a witch, and he gets in the fight at the bar.
Leading into the movie, I completely did not understand the purpose of that character, because they would cut to her pretty fairly regularly, but seemingly out of nowhere. Like he'd be off fucking around with dude robbing him in the forest, and they would just cut to his mom like looking at the sky or some shit. Mm-hmm. And I was always like, there's something important about this character that I am not understanding.
The vibe that I got even last night, remember I said, I guess she summoned it. Like what I don't understand is who the wolf is or the fox. But the vibe that I got was that he's an irresponsible, you know, ne'er-do-well rich kid that she's worried about him becoming a piece of shit forever. Cause he's like, where's your boots? And he's like, oh, is it mass? And she's like, rolling her eyes like there's
at no, like mass.
Yeah, there's at no point do you think he convinced her, nor is he interested in it. Going to bed, mom. And then she's like, I'm going to stay back from the Christmas party. And there's something like sly about the way she's saying it. And then you see the scene where she blindfolds herself and seems to summon the Green Knight. So the interpretation I had was that she did all of this to make him become a man.
That's what I got to.
The trial of it.
So that's why when the movie ended, it ended with the song, Now You're a Man by Trey Parker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
man.
What a weird soundtrack at the end there. For
I did
sure.
notice that the soundtrack periodically used like classical music. Straight up Moonlight Sonata was in that soundtrack at one point. And I was like, I had just been trying to learn it on guitar. And I was like, yep, those are the notes.
That's anachronistic. That didn't come out for 300 more years. But ultimately, I think I will watch this again just so that I can make sure that I'm right. Now, I mean, like I said, I love this movie. I gave it 4 stars. There's so much more in this movie, even with my nits to pick, than
I do
most
think
movies.
I think you're right. Periodically, just like their artistic whimsy gets the better of them. There's a shot where it's like this awesome tracking shot, like, or maybe a drone shot just flying across this beautiful marsh, and then we have this really long, we're gonna rotate it 180 degrees. Mm-hmm.
That's why I
mean, it's in the trailer.
You were paying for your parking, but I was doing that on the ceiling, like rotating and stuff, walking really slowly, making fun of the movie with Steve, and he's getting a kick out of it.
It's like, why are you doing this?
Right.
Still doing it.
Andy, you had a really good take on the ending specifically that I thought was really, really good, specifically about his head being chopped off and how like he had that vision and how his life ended up the same way anyway. Mm-hmm.
I think that it was ultimately him being obsessed with safety. It was the sash, I think, was just a symbol of self-absorption. It was a protection of yourself from everything in the outside world, both the good and the bad. And so every time, once we get to what ultimately is revealed to be a flash forward, we see like quote unquote sex scenes and stuff, but you know, his new bride won't let his new bride take the sash off, and he's wearing the sash when he's having his portrait done, and yada yada yada. And I felt like it was him. It was literally like him refusing to grow. And so when we did get him dying at the end, when he like takes the sash off and his head falls off and stuff, we got to see like ultimately his obsession of self-preservation, like being for naught, because your fate is inevitable, I think is one of the things that this ultimately trying to talk about. But when the when we get him taking the sash off at the end, that was like ultimately his growth. And so when the Green Knight says, now off with your head, that is to me ultimately like an off with your ego, off with the things, off with the childish parts of you that, you know, were holding you back from being the person that you could be. And I don't know why I want to bring this up now, but I keep going back to Alicia Vikander. She plays two parts. She plays the girl that he is sleeping with back in Camelot. And then she also plays the lady of the castle, which is Egerton. But there's that shot.
Is that the same girl?
Yeah, those are both Alicia Vikander.
Oh, man. Wow.
But there's a shot where before he's going to set out on her quest, he kind of gets like this opportunity to be a good person and to, you know, like accept the call to, you know, I don't know, responsibility, I guess. When she says, like, what if I asked you to make me your lady? You know, what would you think of that?
Yeah, she asked for marriage.
What if I had your ear as well as your cock? And like turns his head and then like uses him as a marionette. It's really effective. But like when he ultimately doesn't say anything, it's fucking beautiful. During that flashback or flash forward sequence, we get this shot where it's like her looking at him and seeing like, I don't know, the scars of the trials and tribulations that he went through and stuff. But you get this lingering shot of her looking at his neck where the bit's missing. And that to me was like symbolic because the whole conceit was that he was supposed to go be beheaded. And I think that the necklace that she had given to him with the little bauble on it was supposed to be indicative of, no, this is the thing that will actually protect you. You being a man and, you know, dealing with the consequences of the decisions you've made, i.e. like, hey, you chose to be with me and yada, yada. But yeah, I thought that it was beautifully done the way that they ended. And honestly, I think more effective than the original
I'm story. So glad that you say all that stuff, because it's connecting a lot of dots for me. Because I honestly was, usually I can follow movies pretty well, but this movie I was struggling with. And yeah, it could just be because I showed up kind of like buzz. So
it probably didn't help. But
at the end of the movie, we were leaving. Like, did it look off like out of focus to any of you guys? And you're like, no, critical focus, whole movie. I'm like, all right, well, I'll shut up.
There were two Gowans the whole time. Yeah.
You did ask if it was out of focus. That's hilarious. Well, I think that about sums it up. We all feel changed and would highly recommend that you see the film. I know this is post spoilers, so most of you have already, but some of you are just true brigands and don't care about spoilers. But that's about all we have time for this week. Next week will of course be The Suicide Squad. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
Happy streaming.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.